Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 163. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director at TechTarget, and I am here with security news writer Alex Khalafi. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Rob, and hello.
A lot going on this week.
Yeah, which is funny because this whole podcast is dedicated to one story.
Yes. we kind of knew this was happening.
Thursday?
So, yeah, word trickled out last Thursday by way of a Reuters report that Christopher Krebs, the director of CISA, had essentially run afoul of President Trump and expected to be fired, according to various sources close to Krebs with knowledge of the situation. And I mean, we expected this to happen. We expected eventually Krebs to be let go. It didn't seem like it was the kind of thing that was going to not happen. Essentially, Krebs had, and his agency, CISA, had been pushing back against a number of claims, rumors, misinformation and disinformation about the election, both prior to the election, during the election, and most notably after the election. The agency had been, we covered this in our last podcast, the agency had been very sort of aggressive in countering that misinformation and disinformation with their rumor control website and Krebs himself on Twitter. Well, that didn't go so well. And I believe it was Tuesday evening, Trump, in a couple of tweets, terminated the employment of Chris Krebs as director of CISA. So maybe we should start there, Alex, because we had a spirited discussion on our Slack channel Tuesday night when this happened. I saw it. I threw it up on Slack. I didn't expect you guys, you or Ariel, to be checking it at 8 o'clock. Yeah, what was your reaction?
Well, what's fun about that Slack channel, even though it's used for work purposes, is that when something big happens in cybersecurity, that like especially has like outside of cybersecurity implications, I like going on the Slack channel because I know you're gonna have a take on it immediately. Yeah. It's like checking Twitter when like something big happens. It's like I check the search security Slack channel.
It's my own personal.
Only three people.
Yeah, it's my own personal Twitter to you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was, in fact, I would have responded sooner, but I was doing something else. And then I checked Twitter and I was like, oh God, it actually happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, my initial take is one, of course it happened. And, two, would it be too political to call this kind of a bummer?
No, I don't think so. I mean, and we should say that, listen, I have been doing this job at TechTarget now for a while. I've been with TechTarget a number of years, including 2015, 2016 election. And I know that it's not really in our wheelhouse to get into the politics side of this stuff, you know, the government side of what's going on here post-election. And we're not going to try to do that. But it is a bummer. I mean, because this guy was pretty good at his job by all accounts. We're going to get into that. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I felt pretty silly for even thinking that there was a chance that that maybe Krebs would be spared. But yeah, my reaction was, well, yeah, I mean, I expected it. It's still disappointing to see. But it sort of speaks to the larger issue around, you know, the friction between the government, the Trump administration, and this agency, which is under DHS, which has taken the point on election security the past few years. This agency was created, to Trump's credit, was created in 2018. It was sort of an offshoot of or, you know, other sort of efforts within the government to shore up election security. And it was, yeah, I share your reaction. It was a bummer. And it was weird too, because, you know, I know Alex, you wrote the story that we did covering the firing, but, you know, Krebs had been kind of quiet with his official CISA account and on Twitter, and hadn't made any statements. He was scheduled to give a talk at an event on Wednesday, but hadn't really been in the public eye, you know, from Thursday up until Tuesday. But he posted that tweet Tuesday afternoon, which was, you know, sort of pushing, I would say lightly pushing back against some of the stuff that was out there. And I, you know, for posterity's sake, I'll read it, you know, because he retweeted Matt Blaze, a renowned, well-known election security expert. Matt Blaze had said, scientists say no credible evidence of voter fraud in the 2020 election outcome, but policymakers must work with experts to improve confidence. And he, you know, links to his blog post on the matter. And so Krebs retweeted that, and in his own tweet said, in case you missed it, on allegations that election systems were manipulated, 59 election security experts all agree, quote, in every case of which we are aware, these claims either have been unsubstantiated or are technically incoherent. Now, that's something I want to focus on in a little bit. But, you know, he tweeted that, and then it wasn't that long, you know, it was a few hours later in the day that he's officially fired by Trump.
Well, Trump's first of two tweets.
Yes.
Reference that exact statement.
Yes.
Which,
go.
I'm sure. Well, I'll read the statement in a second. Actually, no, I'll read it right now and then say what I was going to say. The recent statement by Chris Krebs on the security. This is from @RealDonaldTrump. The recent statement by Chris Krebs on the security of the 2020 election was highly inaccurate, and that there were massive improprieties and fraud, including dead people voting, poll watchers not allowed into polling locations, glitches in voting machines which changed votes from Trump to Biden, late voting, and many more. Therefore, effective immediately, Chris Krebs has been terminated as director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Okay, so the tweet very much suggests that it was this one statement that led to his firing. And for all we know, there could have been an impulse at hand that, like, this just pushed it past the point of no return.
Sure.
But I'm still guessing this was building up for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, according to the reports, you know, most notably the Reuters report, this has been building. You know, there's, and again, we're not going to go into the sort of the specifics. We're not going to go point by point on some of the things that the CISA Rumor Control website has refuted or pushed back against. We'll just say that there are a number of theories out there about what happened with the election results that are fairly wild, and as Krebs has noted, either technically like impossible or incoherent or unsubstantiated. Most notably, the two big ones, as far as, you know, hacking goes and cyber attacks, were the hammer and scorecard theory that we talked about in the last podcast, which I don't want to go through again. My head's going to explode. And then also the Dominion voting, you know, the allegations that this vendor has somehow, you know, either directly manipulated or someone has used them to manipulate voting results and change results. And, you know, it's the across multiple states, which is, you know, fairly wild given that we have a decentralized election infrastructure. But yeah, so he's fired. Mm-hmm. And then almost immediately, and you covered this in the story, I mean, this had been happening prior to the firing. He has a lot of fans in the InfoSec community. I mean, have you seen one sort of negative, like, oh, Krebs, you know, not so hot. You know, didn't do such a great job. Kind of overrated. I haven't seen anything like that. I mean,
from inside the cybersecurity community, yes, and not from people outside. Yeah. There's been, I'm not saying there is no one. I'm saying I haven't seen anyone.
Right. And you talked to a number of people. Ariel also contributed to the article and talked to some folks. What was the reaction from people, if you can summarize or cherry pick either one?
Yeah, so we had been, in anticipation of this, we had been sort of talking to people, getting their take on the story and just how they felt about Krebs in general. And we got like a pretty good range of cybersecurity professionals, I would say. Yeah. Like we got someone from Sophos, we got Kieran Martin, who is the previously the first CEO of UK's National Cybersecurity Center. Basically, mm-hmm. He was Chris Krebs' counterpart in the UK. We got other types of we got a comment from the CEO of Dragos. Okay. Yeah.
Rob Lee, yes.
So very much open and like, as someone who writes stories, I don't have a preference for feedback, but I always like to see a mix because like it feels like it tells a complete story.
Sure,
but
it's more interesting.
Right. But we reached out. We were just like, hey, what do you think about this? Every single person came back with either moderately glowing or very glowing feedback for Chris Krebs. And like, yeah. No one like had anything very strong and negative to say about like his firing per se. Like the people we contacted were especially very, I would say, professional about it. But there was definitely a lot of like, yeah, it would be a bummer if like he got let go.
Yeah. You know, it's rare to find somebody that, particularly in this administration, who this administration has been a lightning rod, and there's been a lot of political appointees who have been criticized and sort of viewed in very harsh lights. But it seemed like the appeal and the respect for Krebs was universal. And certainly in the InfoSec community, I mean, there's people, and you, I don't remember who it was in your article, but at least one person said, you know, they the next administration should bring him back. You know, even though he worked under a Republican president, and I think that speaks volumes. I mean, the guy worked really hard to shore up election security over the last few years, was very vocal about what needed to be done and what was being done. And I think that's really rare in security. I think that's really rare in government. But like when he, you know, like he was talking about, we've talked a lot about sort of the Black Hat 2020 session that he did, where he talked about the threat of ransomware attacks on, you know, local government networks and how that could disrupt voting. One of the things he and others have done within CISA prior to that was making sure that we just protect the voter registration databases and you know, make sure that those aren't tampered with, and just take sort of basic steps to alert these organizations or these county and local governments that this is a threat, that you're going to have threat actors trying to get into these things, and that you need to take, you know, whatever, two-factor authentication, just closing down, you know, unused ports or shutting down RDP, and just making sure that you're not totally exposed and that a threat actor can just waltz into your voter registration database and start pulling. I mean, again, all this information is public. I mean, it's not secret, but when you can just pull that data out easily, and we'll talk about this. I mean, you know, Alex, this came into play with one of the disinformation campaigns, the Proud Boys, you know, the supposed Proud Boys email with the video threatening that if you don't vote for Trump, or if you know, you better vote for Trump or else, threatening political violence. It wasn't really them. It was, you know, now they believe it was Iranian threat actors, but they were able to do that because they got into at least one swing state, the voter registration databases of this swing state, and pulled out the data and just started email blasting, spamming these voters with this stuff. So just taking basic steps like that, very important.
One of the most revealing comments, I would say, came from Chet Wisniewski, principal research scientist at Sophos, where he said that if we look back a year or 2 years as to the capability of CISA to be a useful function for organizations in the United States to understand what's going on in the threat space, they went from worthless, presumably pre-CISA, to actually sending out really meaningful information in the last 2 years. So it kind of like tells me, and you've been in cybersecurity, covering cybersecurity a lot longer, maybe you can touch on this. It seems like he's saying that pre-CISA, there wasn't really very transparent information that would help people in the cybersecurity space.
Yes, 1,000%. And I think I'll put it to you this way. Again, I'm a journalist. I only cover this stuff. I don't work with this stuff. But I think if Krebs and CISA did nothing, literally nothing else other than just sort of up the transparency of the threats that we were facing with alerts and advisories, which they obviously do, and just put information out there on how to address those threats and shore up security and communicate with vendors that are affected and get them in the loop and just be a partner and an information conduit, which they obviously did, then that would have been enough, honestly, because it was a, you know, to give you an idea of what this was like in 2016. I mean, like, you know, people like campaigns are getting hacked. The DNC is getting hacked, and nobody knows what's going on. Nobody knows where, who's in charge, what, you know, who needs to be alerted, what the activity is, what the threat group is, what exploits or what vulnerabilities they're using. I mean, think about how many advisories and alerts we've covered just in the last year from CISA. I mean, they and not just for election security, just infrastructure across the United States in general, and just major. I mean, obviously the healthcare alert recently about the ransomware attacks actively targeting hospitals and medical centers. I mean, they are on top of things. I don't expect that to change either, just because he is not there. So,
right. It's like he's not the auteur of CISA necessarily. Like, or even though he's in a powerful, important driving force, he was. I'm sure there's a lot of great people there.
Yeah, and we should note. I mean, one of the parts of the discussion for today that we wanted to focus on was, you know, what happens now? Well, you had a little bit of information on that in your story, Alex. Mm-hmm. So
a source with knowledge of the situation said that Brandon Wales, executive director of CISA, who is actually third ranked at CISA, despite having the title executive director, is now acting director, which means that even though there hasn't necessarily been, as far as we know, outright confirmation by a government source that Deputy Director Matt Travis is out, the fact that this source, who does have knowledge of the situation, said that the acting director is now the third rank, that kind of tells us what we need to know, or at least most of what we need to know.
Yeah. No, a lot of outlets a couple days ago when this was going down said, it appears that Travis is also out. It's unclear if he's resigned or if he was fired as well. It's unclear, and there's no official word of whether he's still there or not, but according to the information that we have, which is pretty credible, he would have to be gone if the executive director, if the third in line, is there. And you know, so this isn't just taking one person out. This is, you know, possibly trying to clean house with NCSA, which you can't really do. And maybe, you know, that's a good opportunity to talk about what the executive director position is, as at least as we understand it, Alex.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of reports by well-respected journalism outlets, like AAA journalism outlets, saying definitively that because Wales got promoted the third rank, that he cannot be fired by the president. Now, we've been looking into this for the last day, and we're still sort of looking into it to get, like, total confirmation. We reached out to see, so they haven't told us anything as of this moment. But there's some worry that he can't be fired because of his rank. And what we have read kind of talks about who the president can and can't fire in articles unrelated to this specific issue, where if you're politically appointed or if you're a certain type of officer from some of these agencies, you can be fired by the president. But if you're just a government employee, you can't necessarily just be fired by the president. And yes, there's a lot of nuance there, of course.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm wondering is if, because he's the third rank and wasn't originally one of the core officers, despite having a very impressive title, if that protects him as acting director from being fired. And then we're going to reach out to a couple more people, and we'll hopefully have an update on this either via article or on the next Risk and Repeat podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. I mean, there are a lot of outlets that have said, you know, because he's not a political appointee, because the executive director position is, you know, that of a your average sort of government employee, that this isn't a situation where you can, you know, just fire the director of the FBI or the, you know, secretary of state or whatever. It's a little different. How different? I don't know. I mean, the norms these days for governments in the United States are, let's just say they're in flux. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't go putting this in stone, but yeah, it seems like, that executive director position is, not on the same level as the director or deputy director. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. Before we wrap up here, I do want to talk about sort of the work that CISA has done on the disinformation and misinformation side. And, you know, I should note that this has sort of been a longstanding debate, not just recently, for people taking issue with our coverage of these matters, or complaining about them, or this has been going on a long time. I remember back in 2016 and afterward, there were a lot of questions about why a security publication would be discussing things like fake news and cognitive hacking and disinformation campaigns and so on and so forth. And I think those are fair questions. I mean, they were fair questions 4 years ago. They're fair questions now. As far as I go,
mm-hmm.
when it comes to misinformation and disinformation, I think you can have a debate about whether it's quote unquote a security issue. But I think when a security agency like CISA is taking action against these types of campaigns or activity, or clearly they see it as a threat. And I think a lot of people do. I think a lot of election security experts right now are saying, you know, that this is a problem and these things need to be addressed, because they're really no different than what a foreign threat actor would do with a hacking campaign to create, lies out of nothing to undermine the confidence of the population in the election results. I mean, that's that's what foreign APTs do, whether they're from Iran or Russia or whoever. But I guess the question is, you know, does a distinction need to be made between foreign APTs and just your average, you know, domestic voter who is a, you know, who's a QAnon supporter or just a Trump supporter and just, you know, is just thinks that, you know, something fishy is gone on here and is maybe sort of pushing information that is unverified and seems kind of out there. You know, is that the role of an agency like CISA? Should they be getting into that type of stuff? Should they be wading into it? And is there even any way to make a distinction between the two, you know, foreign and domestic disinformation?
It's a very complicated issue.
Complicated. Yeah. I mean, that's why I asked you. I was hoping you'd go first. And because, you know, even though I've been doing this longer and have some experience with this a few years ago, I honestly can see both sides of the argument.
Right. So here's why I think it's complicated is because just from a security publication standpoint, as someone who was outside of the cybersecurity bubble a little more than a year ago, and it's still relatively fresh in my mind, when you think of cybersecurity, I'm sure most of the population thinks of like hackers hacking into the mainframe. And not literally that, like that's kind of a cartoonish example, but like very complicated technological stuff that involves the internet and computers that most civilians, let's say, wouldn't understand, which includes me especially a year ago, but of course I'm still learning. Where it becomes complicated is the disinformation stuff, because it's you're impacting users via the internet through this disinformation stuff, especially through social media, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it doesn't, it's not a bunch of ones and zeros like in the movies, but like it still involves internet security in a way. And then it sort of gives a lot of questions about like, what kind of moderation should we have?
Yeah.
And then it rises and then it gives way to questions of, well, who's doing the information and is it earnest misinformation, if that makes sense?
No, it does. It absolutely. I mean,
that's... And like where the line is and how that needs to be moderated. And like, it's like, yes, I do think there's definitely ground to cover misinformation as a security outlet, because information security kind of can loosely be attached to that. And sure, like it's sort of internet communications in a sense. But it's also so complicated that I wouldn't dare discredit anyone who calls it a non-cybersecurity issue.
Yeah. To your, you know, well-meaning sort of rumor mongering and misinformation, like I think there's that, and then there's sort of the malicious spreading of misinformation and really sort of harmful campaigns that are designed to, like I said, undermine the confidence of the voter and so civil unrest and potentially violence. I mean, that's really like I think that is the ultimate goal of some of these campaigns, but it's really, really hard to kind of stop and separate like between the people that are buying into it and sort of acting as unwitting agents by spreading it or amplifying it and the source of the misinformation, whether it's the hackers or whether it's just nefarious political actors, who knows? And I think that that's like for my own selfish personal reasons, like I want to cover this stuff because I think it's interesting. And I think the work that CISA and other, you know, private organizations and looking at disinformation and how it spreads on the internet and how it shapes public opinion and sort of warps reality. Like I'm fascinated by that. But yeah. I also think that, like, there's a case to be made for agencies like CISA and for security experts to take an active role in this stuff because there is a not so fine line about where this starts and where it ends and the effects of it and how it's, you know, I used to scoff at the term cognitive hacking, but I do think that there is a way that technology is used to basically shape and warp people's public opinion of issues like this. And I think that it'd be too easy to just kind of sit back and say, well, CISA shouldn't be doing this because it's not really hacking. It's not really cybersecurity. And it's public opinion. But, you know, then you may wake up a year or two down the road and find out that, like, well, something nefarious was going on in it, and it is akin to hacking. And we sort of let it get out of control and didn't do enough to address it or counter it in some way. So.
Yeah. And like, I was just, as you were talking, I was thinking a little bit, and like, where it gets messy is even if it starts from a foreign actor or like someone with malicious intent, then you have to worry about things like confirmation bias from the people reading it.
Yep.
And then, like, those people are most likely earnestly taking in information. Like, I'm not going to talk down to anyone who, like, who gets information that turns out to be incorrect or whatever. But it's just, like, once it leaves that source and just goes out into the wild, it becomes such a damn mess.
And I think, sort of wrap up the conversation, like, I don't think either of us thinks that because Krebs got fired that they're going to move away from taking an active role in addressing misinformation and disinformation as a security threat. I don't think that's going to happen. And I think they'll probably continue with it. If anything, it is, I think more organizations, private and public, will probably be involved in this going forward. Would you agree? I mean, I hope.
Yeah, yeah, I would say so. I think you're totally right.
I'll end by saying, salute to Chris Krebs and mm-hmm. to everybody over at CISA for what they've done over the last few years, the effort that they've put in, the work that they've done, the transparency, and just the commitment to the job. Salute you guys.
Totally.
Well, Alex, thank you for joining me on another spirited, lengthy discussion about election security and what's gone on over the last few weeks. I'm sure there'll be more to discuss probably in the coming months. We'll see. But thanks as always for joining me.
Thank you, Rob.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Search Security. I'm Rob Wright, and we will see you next time.